Playing at the Workers' Playtime Tuesday, 6 to 8 with Mikkel Beckman over at the 331 Club. Then Pulup, who Estonian, they're at the Cedar Cultural Center the 23rd of September. Get on over there for that. Also, Ashwarya Shankar, Indian Music Society of Minnesota's third concert of the fall season this coming Saturday over at the College of St. Catherine. So get on over there. Important thing is support live music. Palmer's last day for any of you who are Palmer's regulars. Music's going to start in 1 hour. Doors open in a half an hour. Get on over there. That about does it for me. The time is 10 o'clock. You are listening to KFAI, 90.3 FM HD in Minneapolis, and on the web at kfai.org. Stay tuned. Coming up next is The Wave Project.
You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM HD, Minneapolis-St. Paul, and on the web at kfai.org. For the next 60 minutes, you'll be hearing The Wave Project, KFAI's weekly community access hour. If you'd like to produce your own one-hour radio program, information on applying can be found at kfai.org/waveproject. The views expressed on this program are those of the persons expressing them and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of Fresh Air's Incorporated Board of Directors, volunteers, or staff.
Good morning and welcome to KFI Wave Project. And my name is Elena Mityushin. I've been here a few times before. I'm the founder of Russians Against War in Minnesota. And today we're doing a show about writing letters to political prisoners. And I actually have three guests with me in a studio. And we'll take about 20 minutes each today talking with each of the guests. And we'll play a song in the middle of it. We'll go to commercial three times during the show. And I'd like each of my guests to just briefly introduce themselves. We just say their name and how they're involved in the organization. And then we'll go into deeper introductions after each guest has a chance to speak more. Rita, can you please start and introduce yourself briefly?
Yeah, my name is Rita, and I joined that wonderful project for about like a year ago, right, Lena? So I'm so excited that I'm part of this initiative. And I think that's the not that many chances in our world to do something little, but that action, that little action, can change a lot. So I appreciate that Lynn is organizing that, and I'm in that, I'm the part of that activity.
And Rita is a biologist too, so she has a lot of other important things to do, like science and changing the world, and she's also helping with this, so we're very grateful. Ira?
Hi, my name is Irina, and I am a linguist. I teach at the University of Minnesota, and I joined the project about 6 months ago, I would say a little over 6 months ago. I have been doing many things and trying to do many things that I can do to change something, or at least to contribute to, you know, making the world a better place a little bit. When I learned about this initiative, about the people here actually in Minnesota getting together and writing letters, I joined immediately, and I started with writing, and then I now volunteer as a translator and that type of stuff.
And Ira is also a professor at the university, so she has also a lot of important things to do, and yet they're also helping out, so we are so very appreciative. Elizabeth, would you say a few words about yourself?
Yes, my name is Elizabeth. I joined the Letter Writing Project last summer after joining the Museum of Russian Art. I was perusing their website, looking at their events and upcoming things, and I saw the letter writing event and was struck by the fact that these people are in prison for doing the right thing. They spoke out against the war. And I thought, what remarkable people they are. And I wanted to get to know some of them, and I have.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. And today what I wanted to do is I wanted to hear from all three of these wonderful volunteers who are heavily involved in the project. And we're going to read some of the letters from the prisoners that we actually received. They're going to read some excerpts of what they wrote as well. But also during the show, I wanted to address some FAQs and main questions that we have been receiving over the last 2 years that people always ask. And we wanted to bring clarity to those. For example, what to write, what not to write, why should I write, why is it important to write, and how do I write my first letter. So some of these themes will be interwoven during the show, and I hope that will help bring clarity and also help us get more people involved. We are hosting our next event at Timora, the Russian Museum of Art, on September 25th. It's going to be a beautiful event. It's a beautiful space. We invite everybody to attend it. Today, we're going to hopefully get more people involved as a result of our show. We also are looking for more venues all the time to host our events. So if you're a nonprofit that's interested in human rights and are interested in human dignity, or your university who wants to involve your students in Minnesota or across the country, we would welcome to partner with you and host an event there. I will start with Rita right now, and I will ask her some questions. But before I do that, I want Rita to say a little bit more about who she is and what a wonderful person she is and how much things she does in her life. After that, we'll jump into questions. But I want you guys to be aware of how important these people are to the world in general, not just helping writing to the political prisoners. Rita, you're a biologist. Can you share a little bit about what your passions are and what your life is like outside of this project?
Okay, so I'm working at the University of Minnesota,
and my topic is oncolytic viruses. So maybe you don't know, but viruses can be our friends. So they can cure cancer and many other diseases. So they are like little, I would say, like machines which can deliver to our bodies some very beneficial proteins and other stuff. So, and we use viruses as vehicles and at the same time as an agent to kill cancer cells and to deliver some therapeutic proteins to treat cancer patients. So there is my topic at the University
of Minnesota.
So
there we go. Rita is changing the world there. And she's also a coordinator for our team of volunteers who is translating letters and sending letters to prison. So Rita took this on herself a year ago, and she's managing this team. One of the first questions I wanted to ask you, Rita, is what motivated you to get involved, given that you have such a busy life outside of this and such an important work outside of this? What motivated you to get involved here, and why do you keep going?
Okay, so I think most of Russian-speaking community was just shocked 3 years ago when the war started, 3.5 years ago already. And of course, everybody started thinking what I can do to change at least anything, even something little. And when I learned that actually letters to political prisoners really work, So they protect them at least a little bit. So they really give them a hope. They give them some rest at least. They reading. They like moving from the prison somewhere, which that letter describes some other beautiful world for them. And there is at least a little rest. And when I learned that it really helps, it really works, so I immediately joined this project. And of course, my scientific background helped me to organize this process, so it's gonna be efficient, and it's really keeping the prisoner in mind, how to deliver the message, how to, for example, if some prisoner is not getting letter for some time. Of course, I can do that. So I'm keeping in mind every niche person we are sending letters to. And yeah, so
Rita has developed, and she is right that she has a very scientific approach. I would say it's almost military. She has a Excel spreadsheet set up that I don't know. She can run numbers on me on Excel there. Very organized. We get dozens of letters. They get sent out within a week. We get responses back. She has the team translate them and send them back to people. So we have letters going back and forth, dozens of them. Very grateful to Rita for her talent, for organizing the team and keeping this project. And like she mentioned, it does work. I'm also a very pragmatic person, and I don't get involved in things that I don't see any meaning in or direct result in. And I do see that the letters work. We've received hundreds of letters back from the prison. They do bring hope to people, like Rita said, but they also protect them from possible abuse, because if people on the outside know about the prisoner and they know the word might get out of them being mistreated, that it's less likely to happen. And of course, we never have a guarantee of this, but what we've heard from prisoners, and I've talked to a couple of them who've gotten released from prisons, that the administration knows that these people are getting letters. The cellmates know that they're getting letters, and it's a different treatment. And it does make a difference, and they are treated better. I've heard of one sad story when there were two cellmates, and one prisoner was getting letters and another wasn't, and he asked his cellmate to read the letters, even though they weren't meant for him. He just wanted that, like Rita mentioned, that window to the world, and just to have that freedom for those few minutes and kind of a glimpse of what it is like. And the letters weren't meant for him, but he was still trying to read them. Rita, what I wanted to ask you as well, you've read hundreds of letters, possibly you've helped send hundreds, you've wrote dozens, if not hundreds. What are, in your experience reading those and sending those, what are the main themes that you hear from the prisons when you're reading those letters? What are people writing about back from the prisons? Are there main recurring themes or any things you noticed especially that stood out to you?
So I probably cannot give you a particular topics. They are all different. They are describing their everyday life in prison. For example, some prisoners are involved in some arts or music projects, and they are very excited. It's probably the only, I would say, exciting, also not very exciting, but still stuff they can do in prison. So they talk about their life before being in prison, so, and they describe their family. It may be some very philosophical, I would say, topics to discuss something like politics and economics and everything, what is going on in the world. So they, from our letters, they get this information, what is going on around the world, and they, of course, discuss it a lot. And of course, it's very hard to discuss politics, but still it's kind of possible to avoid some particular phrases, but still it's possible. So I would say the topics are very broad. It depends on person and the author of the letter.
What have you noticed that people write to prisons, Americans and Russians who write to prisons or other nationality? Are there any specific things that people ask about or curious about?
So they usually start their letter describing who they are, So, like, the profession that a lot of people write about Minnesota, what a beautiful state we are living in, about 10,000 lakes. There is almost in each letter. I think all the prisoners in Russia right now know that Minnesota has at least 10,000 lakes. Yeah, so they're describing just weather right now and nature in their homes, in their, again, profession, and what do they do, like, usually. So that's kind of topics. I would say it's a good start just to introduce briefly yourself. What are you doing? What are you interested in? And usually people ask prisoners about books because not all of them, but most prisoners still allowed to read what they want to. Not, of course, all the books they would like to, but still some. So describing the books is good. Almost nobody allows to listen to music they would like to in prison. So, but at least they can discuss the music. So, yeah, that kind of topics.
And Rita is right. A lot of prisoners know about Minnesota now. And when we first started writing, they're like, where is Minnesota? People didn't really know about the state. And then people start writing about the lakes. Yes, 10,000 lakes is a very main fact that I think everybody knows about. People write about the birds. People write about the weather. I think a lot of the people in Siberia can connect with Minnesota winters. And it's been wonderful to see that these Russian people in prisons are connecting to a Minnesota state that they've never heard about. And there's so many similarities. And I think one of the things I really love about this project is it builds bridges between people. It builds connections. And when you find more similarity with each other, you reduce stereotypes, you reduce fear towards each other. And I do believe that we are building we're trying to build a more safer world and more secure world by doing this project. Obviously, the immediate benefits is it gives people hope, it protects them. But overall, if you look at the big picture and a more strategic approach to this project, it builds bridges with people. We have university students writing letters. We have Americans writing letters. We have some Americans who have never heard about political prisoners or Russia, and these Russian political prisoners are responding back and they're learning more. And I think as we're building these bridges, as we're building this connection and this human connection, the stereotypes about each other are getting reduced. The fear about each other is getting reduced. And then later, when, for example, these students, university students, are having jobs in places they can affect policy, possibly, and decisions, they will keep in mind that several years ago, they were in communication with these Russian political prisoners and they had authentic connection with them. And when they're making these decisions or the decisions that they might impact the world, I think they might be making them based on that real connection and based on reality rather than stereotypes and fear. I see a lot of decisions right now in our country towards immigration made out of fear, out of stereotypes, and that doesn't lead to good outcomes for people. And so I think this project, if you think about a more broader approach to this, it will build a more secure world where we have people connected to each other, where we have less stereotypes and more realistic understanding about each other, and hopefully that will lead to a much safer world. I have a couple of other questions. And I'm going to repeat our next event before we go into commercial in a few minutes. Again, it's at Timora, Russian Museum of Art, on September 25. It's going to be a letter writing event. Please come. It's going to be a beautiful space, and we're going to write letters to political prisoners. You don't need to speak Russian to write letters. We will translate letters. You can write them in English. It is an electronic system. The letters still get delivered. And this whole show is about motivating more people to write letters to political prisoners in Russia, because it does help and it gives them hope. We're going to commercial in a few minutes, but I wanted to ask Rita to read an excerpt from the letter that she wrote and also a letter that she received back from prison.
So first I would like to share some sentences which I got back from the prisoners, and they are really touching. I will try not to cry while reading this, but the first one is, "Dear Margarita, I express my most sincere gratitude for organizing the correspondence with the newly found foreign friends. The letters from Elizabeth actually are something truly wonderful and special. The second one, hello, Rita. Believe me, I value and cherish every single letter because I know that behind each one, there is a person, their care and support, and that is priceless. Stay strong in the thought that what you are doing is right. Believe me, those seemingly cliche notions such as compassion and sympathy have in these twisted times become like the ray of Aldebaran, a breath of fresh air and a source of motivation. Thank you so much. And the third one, I don't even know how to describe this emotions in human language, but it is a wonderful feeling to realize that even thousands of miles away, people are concerned about you. Your support is a very precious gift to me. And I would like just to share the example of a letter the person can start writing with, and just this was a letter which I wrote like more than a year ago, and still we keeping in touch with this guy. His name is Sergey, and I started my letter with the words, my name is Rita, I'm originally from Novosibirsk, it's the capital of Siberia, and now I live and work in Minnesota in the very north of the United States. I came here 3 years ago. Now it's 5 years ago already. Oh, so I actually wrote this letter even 2 years ago. Oh, my God. Okay. So I came here 3 years ago to learn how to work with so-called oncolytic viruses. I'm from Novosibirsk's Akademgorodok, and maybe you've heard about that. Do you get a chance to read? If yes, what have you enjoyed lately? I myself recently dove into the classic and finally read War and Peace. And now I feel a little closer to our Yulia Shulman. Oh my gosh, but why is Yulia? But whatever. And smile to myself when she quotes Tolstoy. What kind of music do you like? If I love some rock music, and then I describe the funny story how I attended the concerts of my concert of my favorite band. How do you pass the time? What do you miss the most? I miss our Siberian forest. Here in Minnesota, there are only not that forest which I liked in Siberia, but still they are wonderful. But you can see lots of animals right out of the street, like deers, geese, turkeys. They are not afraid of anything and eat up everyone's gardens. So that was my first letter. And again, I would say like the writing letters to prisoners is much easier than you can imagine. So you just take your pen or your computer and you just try describing your life. Just be honest, be relaxed. It's so simple. You just write like, hi, my name is like Rita, and I'm sitting here, and just sometimes people just writing, I don't know what to write, but I'm just writing because I want to support you. And this honest words matter a lot. So
thank you so much, Rita. We are going to commercial break now, and then we'll have our next guest, Elizabeth, share about why she is involved in this project.
KFAI. Congress has voted to zero out the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, eliminating funding KFAI relies on to help covering operating costs and music licensing fees that allow us to play the music you love. In the past, KFAI has weathered challenges by staying close to our mission. Everyone deserves access to media that reflects who they are. We also believe in community ownership of the airwaves. We share joy, we speak the truth, while connecting community through our wave of sound. Now we need our community to help carry us through. Please start a monthly gift today or increase what you gave earlier this year. Go to KFAI.org to donate. With your help, we can continue broadcasting as Fresh Air Community Radio. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we are back to KFI morning radio program about writing letters to political prisoners in Russia. My name is Elena Mityushina, and I'm a founder of a local nonprofit, Russians Against War Minnesota. And one of the main projects that we have been doing for the last 2 years is we've been writing letters to political prisoners in Russia, people who have been imprisoned for their opinion, both Russian and Ukrainians, people who are held in jail for just saying the things that the government doesn't want them to say. Some of them said the word war because the word war is illegal in Russia. Some of them posted something on social media. Some of them said something in school or in a clinic. One of the things I always try to remind people is even though we have this term political prisoners, these people are not political actors. Most of them are not. These people are not politicians. And most of the time, they didn't even know they would be going to prison and didn't want to go to prison. These people are doctors and students and musicians and lawyers. And we are writing letters to them to help bring them hope. We want them to not feel forgotten. And we want to support them. We know that letters, and we've written hundreds of letters collectively as a community in the last 2 years. We know that letters are getting delivered. We receive responses back. We know that letters bring hope, and we also know that letters protect people from abuse. So we really, really would love for more people to get involved. Our next event is at the Russian Museum of Art on September 25. Please come, and if you don't speak Russian, we will translate your letters. It's a beautiful space. We'll have some tea and pastries there as well, and a nice community that you can also hang out and chat with as you're looking at beautiful art around you as you're writing letters. Today, we have three guests on the show, and my second guest, who is going to be speaking about her experience in this project, is Elizabeth. And she has written dozens of letters and exchanged many, many letters with prisoners. And I want her to share an American perspective of why she's involved in this project. Elizabeth, would you say just a couple of words of who you are and how did you get involved?
Yes, my name is Elizabeth. I think I said that I'd been to the Museum of Russian Art, became a member, looked at their website and saw that they had the letter writing event. And when I went to the first letter writing event, they have 8.5 by 11 sheets landscape with someone's photo, their name, their age, and a short bio. So I look for people who are close in age to me. Because I figure we have more in common, and I found that to be true. And then I look for something in their bio that speaks to me. One gentleman is a human rights attorney, and someone who fights for people is someone I admire greatly. Another gentleman, at the time of his arrest, he had 13 cats, and I have had cats all my life. And so I wrote to him. And I actually have excerpts of letters that I have written to him and that he has written back.
And we'll read some of those at the end of the Elizabeth segment. Elizabeth, you're a retired and you're an American. Why do you think, as an American, what motivated you to get involved? These are people in Russia. Why do you care?
It doesn't matter that they're in Russia. They're people. And like I said, they did the right thing. And doing the right thing landed them in prison. And it's the opportunity to get to know someone else, someone in another country, someplace I've never been. And I have really reveled in the connection and getting to know these people and sharing my life with them as well.
When you have been writing letters, what has been most surprising to you about this experience, or if anything? I know you like to write a lot. Has anything been most rewarding as you're writing letters or surprising in this experience? You've exchanged dozens of letters,
yes.
I think. You're one of our most active communicator.
Thank you. In terms of most rewarding, you know, if people are listening to this and thinking, I'd like to try this, I would ask you to please keep the commitment to write. We all get busy. We have things we have to do. We have things we like to do. Those things are not afforded to those in prison, and these letters are very important to them. And I treasure the connections that I have made with these people. One gentleman that I have excerpts from our letters, he would like to come to Minnesota, and so maybe I will get to meet him.
What has been rewarding to you about this experience as you've been doing it?
You know, I think if you talk to anyone who's done any kind of volunteering, we feel like we get more than we give. Many, many years ago, I volunteered at Abbott Northwestern Hospital, and every time I left on the drive home, I felt like I got so much more than I gave. And I feel like this, too. I love when I get a letter back. I feel somebody wrote to me. Somebody took their time. There's one gentleman who has 1 hour a day to himself. 1 hour. So if he spends a little bit of that time or all of that time to write to me, how honored am I?
Elizabeth, how, in your experience, how are these letters getting to you? I know, but I want you to tell the audience of how does it work. And is it easy for you to write? Is it easy for you to communicate and send it back? How has our system been set up by Rita and our team?
So if you go to a letter writing event, you can write by hand or you can bring your laptop and write. Your letters get translated into Russian. Now, what I've been doing for quite a while is I use an online translating tool. So I write my letter in English and then I translate it into Russian, and it just makes it easier for the translator to read two letters and make sure the translation is correct than to read and translate. And like I said, pick someone that you feel like you might have a connection with, and then write your letter. So right now I'm doing them on my laptop. Write them in English, write them in Russian, send them off, and...
Where do you send it off to?
To, what's the website?
You don't need to say the email, but are you sending it electronically?
Yes, via email.
You're sending it to an email address?
Right.
And then volunteers pick it up?
Right.
And then you get a response?
Right. And so the letters that come back are handwritten. And so I get copies of those. I don't really look at them much because I can't read Russian. However, sometimes they'll draw a little picture. And like I said, it just brightens my day when I get a letter.
Isn't it nice, though, even though you can't understand the Russian, it's nice to get that handwritten letter?
It is.
That is scanned. So the prisoners, they hand write the letters, and then the censor, obviously, they read the letters, and then they scan them through the electronic system, and that's how they get to our inbox. So while, even though you don't understand Russian, isn't it cool that you can actually see that it's a real letter that the person took time to write?
Yes. I thought I might be able to learn a little Russian. I don't think so. I didn't realize how different the alphabet was. Color me ignorant. And I did get some books from the library thinking that that might help. No, I need to be able to hear the words. So it doesn't mean never, just not now.
What are some of the themes that come out of letters from the prisons? Just in topics or themes that you've noticed?
I think I've learned about their life before prison, where they lived, what the area was like, what their life was like. That's common.
Okay. Do you see connections between Russian and American people? Do you think there are similarities?
I think there are similarities between everyone, regardless of where you live. Mm-hmm. We all have commonality.
What is rewarding to you to keep going?
So for me, I take my commitments very seriously. If I make a commitment, I see it through. And so I'm not stopping until they're out of prison, or in one case, I'm hoping it goes on beyond prison.
That would be very cool if you can actually meet one of them.
Yes.
Because we did have three prisoners released, and they served their term, and now they're exploring ways to maybe stay in Russia or not. But, you know, we never know who we might meet in the future and build those connections. Elizabeth is very committed to writing letters. I want everybody to know you don't have to keep communication like Elizabeth. It's a very dedicated example of writing letters. We want you to come to our events, even if you are not going to keep up communication all the time, because even one letter makes a difference. Even if you write just one letter and never write again, if you just come to one of our events, and if a lot of people do that and just write one letter and they never come again, we still have a lot of people in prison who are receiving letters. So I encourage everybody to write as much as they want or as little as they want. But like Rita said, sometimes there's like a writing block and you don't know what to write, and you're just sitting there saying, I'm sitting here, I don't know what to write, but I want to support you. And sometimes that's all that comes out. But that prisoner knows, and then sometimes the conversation gets developed. I think that one of the most important things you can do in letter writing is staying authentic. Sometimes people are trying to, come up with things that they might think the prisoner might be interested in, which is sometimes hard to do without knowing the prisoner. But if you're staying authentic to what you're interested in and to yourself, I think everybody can sense that we're authentic, and people can sense that through letters too. And I think that if you're writing something from the heart, even if it's short, the prisoners will sense that, and they will respond back, and that you might develop a beautiful communication, or you might just stick with one letter and keep it there. Elizabeth, I want to ask you a little bit about just Americans getting involved. What do you talk about to your American friends when you're done with our event, you come to your normal life and you're like, oh, I've attended this event with Russians Against War in Minnesota. How do people react to you and what questions do they ask? What comes up for them?
They're surprised. I think most people don't know about this and wouldn't even think that it could be. And they always say, I don't know what to write.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them, here's how I start my letters. I tell them, my name is Elizabeth. I'm 65 years old. I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota, United States. I tell them I've never been married. I have no children. That's not going to be true for most other people. I tell them I've had cats all my adult life, and they've always been part of my family. I respond to something in their bio, because that way I can ask them questions about that. I'll tell them about, you know, what's going on in my current life. And like Rita said, I talk about the weather because I'm Minnesotan, especially if it's really extreme, really hot, really cold. And I always end my letters with, your friend in America, Elizabeth.
I think that's beautiful. I think that's, it's so beautiful to build connections, because there's a lot of stereotypes, like, you know, in Russia, for example, I hear, oh, Americans don't like us. Or here I hear, oh, Russians might think of something of us. And I think people really enjoy each other's company, and they're curious about each other. And there are so many more similarities than differences.
Yes.
And by building those, you know, connections, when you're saying your American friend or your friend in America, I think it helps those people kind of reiterate the fact that we are very similar. One other thing that I'm very excited about and is that censors, they read the letters too. They're not our immediate audience, but they read all letters. And we've written hundreds of letters now from Minnesota, and a lot of them are from Americans like you, who are very well wishes, sending well wishes to Russia, to Russian people, and signing, and your American friend, or some people are sharing about, like, I went to Russia a few years ago, or I like this book, or I like this museum, or I like this food. And I've seen hundreds of Americans writing about what they love about Russia and what they love about the Russian people, and censors read those letters. And I think censors are people of the system, of that bureaucratic system, where a lot of them are maybe cynical about the world, or maybe they think all Americans hate us, or whatever is propaganda on Russian TV, that Americans are all out to get us, and, you know, Russia is always going to fight for itself because America is always trying to bring it down. And then censors read that, oh my gosh, all of these Americans are actually sending positive thoughts, and they're taking time to write. And I don't know how much it influences their mindset, but I do think that it has a little bit of weight, because their world, like, constantly have to read our letters, and they're positive letters. They're letters with well wishes, and a lot of them are signed as your American friend. Elizabeth, would you read some of the excerpts from the letter you wrote and what you received back from prison?
Yes. So, as I said, I wrote to Gregory because he had 13 cats at the time of his arrest. In my first letter, I wrote, I admire your work in human rights. I have always had a very strong sense of right and wrong. I so rarely see justice in my society and the world. I find it disturbing. I work to protect the environment too, but in smaller ways. I became vegetarian in 1984 and vegan in 2014. I try to consume less and avoid non-recyclable plastic. My city has bins for food scraps, and they get composted. So between recycling and composting, I have just a small bag of garbage per week. I so relate to you having cats. I have had cats all my adult life and recently said goodbye to my 8th cat, Solomon, who was 16 and a half years old. As you know, they're all special. Solomon was extra special. I miss him terribly. I'm not ready to bring another cat into my life and home yet. 13 cats is a lot to have at one time. I've only ever had 3 cats at a time, twice. I can only imagine how hard it must be to be away from your cats, and to not be able to say goodbye to those who passed after your arrest breaks my heart. In the northern part of my state is a place called the Wildcat Sanctuary. I am a longtime donor and supporter. They have lions, tigers, cougars, bobcats, lynx, hybrids, among many others. The sanctuary has 4 lions, 3 female, 1 male, who were rescued in Ukraine in 2022. They were part of the black market trade, selling wild animals for profit. I have sponsored a handful of animals at the sanctuary over the years. I started out sponsoring smaller cats because the cost was less. When I learned they rescued a tiger named Elizabeth, I had to sponsor her. She recently passed away, so I transferred the sponsorship to a black leopard named Shazam. Can I read some of his letter?
Yes, absolutely. Please do.
First letter from Gregory. I was so happy to receive such an interesting letter from you, written with such love and care toward nature and animals. Please accept my sincere admiration for you, a good and kind person. Thank you for helping stray cats. We are clearly people who have the same values, and I am proud to have received a letter from you. Unfortunately, I do not speak English very well, although in 2001, my paper on paleontology was published by the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C. I wrote it with the help from my friend who used to work as an interpreter for Americans visiting Russia. I have been interested in the United States my whole life and, I think, know quite a lot about your bright, wonderful country. I like that Americans always try to stay true to themselves and build their lives in a way to ensure comfort, and that American schools and universities do not try to strip the kids of their individuality and talents, but on the contrary, support them. My friends in the U.S. are very interesting people, and I learned a lot from them. I wish a lot of joy and happiness to America and Americans. And then he drew a little heart.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
An excerpt from my second letter. I was delighted to hear from you. At least you speak some English. I only speak English. I have been using an online translating tool to translate my English letters into Russian. It makes it easier for the person translating to read just 2 letters and make sure the translation is correct than to read and translate, read and translate. I have requested some books from the library to learn Russian. I'm not sure I'll be successful, but I will try. An excerpt from Gregory's second letter. Dear Elizabeth, I am really happy that our correspondence has continued and that my letters are reaching you. I believe that you are an extremely honorable person with a modern worldview who loves animals and nature. My grandmother, whom I spent a lot of time with, died at the age of 100. Her family had been very progressive and well off prior to the revolution of 1917. In her life, she experienced a lot of suffering and even made an attempt on her own life, but she remained the kindest, gentlest, and delicate person to the end. In June, I managed to do what I had thought was impossible. I handed over an animal protection group, 2 pregnant cats, and 1 cat with 5 newborn kittens who had been living in our colony. Now they are faced with a new dilemma: how to afford their upkeep and whom to adopt them out to. Also in a letter, I had told him about our national parks, the Boundary Waters canoe area, and again, all our lakes in Minnesota. We're very proud of our lakes. And he wrote back, "You wrote about Minnesota in such a poetic way that I now want to visit it. In the part of Russia where I live, where I lived before the arrest, there are lots of forests, high flow rivers, and large lakes, but the surface is so flat, and I don't like that because I grew up in the mountains. I am so grateful that you are reading my letter so carefully and understanding my emotions and feelings." I did write back that Minnesota is pretty flat. We do have some, you know, places where people go rock climbing, but it's pretty flat.
Thank you, Elizabeth, so much. And I think we should be getting credit from University of from the Department of Tourism of Minnesota and Economic Development, because I think in the future when the war ends, we're going to have a lot of tourists being interested in Minnesota. And we have been doing all of this work for 2 years promoting our beautiful state. So I would like to get some credit for that. And it's so beautiful to build those connections. Just hearing Elizabeth's letter about people writing, like, oh, I appreciate hearing about Minnesota. There are so many similarities. This Russian person highlighted how he likes American education and how here we allow kids to be individual, and in Russia, individuality is frowned upon. And so I love the fact that people are exchanging beautiful and positive words towards each other, and we're building this positive connection. Elizabeth, one last question I'll ask you. What do you think is the biggest misunderstanding about Russian people, like from Americans that you're hearing, and how does writing letters help kind of correct that?
I haven't heard anyone really have any misunderstandings. I think they have a sense of really what's going on, and that these people are in prison for no good reason. Sorry, what was the other part of the question?
How do you think, if there are any stereotypes about the Russian people or anything, how does writing letters help you kind of learn more about the real?
I never really had any stereotypes. And again, I get to learn about these people as individuals. Now, you know, the next letter writing event is at the Museum of Russian Art, which is where my first one was. And right before the letter writing event, there had been an exhibit with something about pioneer women of the 1900s or 18th century. So I was able to write a lot about what I saw there. I recently bought a cookbook, and so I was able to talk about some of the recipes. So I'm learning a lot about them.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. And like she said, our next event at the Russian Museum of Art on September 25, we're going to music break now, and then we'll have our guest, Irina, the professor at the university, who also volunteers on our team. Show with writing letters to Russian political prisoners. I'm grateful for KFI for an opportunity to bring that topic to you. Our last guest is Irina, who is a professor at the University of Minnesota, and she volunteers on our team as well. Irina, can you just briefly mention who you are and why you got involved in this project?
Yeah, I got involved because this is something that you can do meaningfully where you are at, right? Here in Minnesota, I moved to the United States in 2014, and I've lived in Minnesota for the last 3 years. I moved here because I got a job at the University of Minnesota, where I teach Russian and linguistics. And until involvement in this project, I have been volunteering for different organizations in Russia and, you know, doing other stuff in my free time. But I didn't know that there was something like that even going on here in Minnesota. And when I heard about that, my first thought was, well, I have to get involved. I think I got a letter from you as, you know, you just emailed my university address and asked.
I emailed a lot of university addresses and a lot of random connections. So
yeah, I think you asked, you introduced yourself and you said that this is what you're doing and if we would be interested in hosting an event or participating in an event. And that was like, oh, there is something like that going on. That's amazing. I really need to get involved. And I think pretty much after my first letter writing event to, you know, where I came as a participant, participant, I thought, well, yeah, I have to get involved as a volunteer as well.
And this was a very lucky email because Irina is a very dedicated volunteer and she writes a lot of letters and comes to all of the events and they bring food and cook and her husband also brings dessert. So we're so grateful for their participation. And as Irina mentioned, I do email a lot of universities and right now I'm in touch with some universities across the country where we are looking to host virtual events that we can support them and they are interested in hosting. So if you're a university right now listening either in Minnesota or if you know of university in another state that would like to host an event, our team can support sending those letters if you can provide us a room and book us a room and we'll open that opportunity to American students and students who would like to write. Irina, from your experience, you've also written dozens of letters and you as a volunteer, you help read those letters and translate them. What are some of the themes that you are kind of hearing about from the letters and what has been motivating to you?
As Rita said before, this is really, the themes are really different. What I notice is that people like to talk about something that is not just their prison experience. Yes, sometimes they do mention their everyday life. You know, if they have a job in prison, they can talk about that, or they can talk about what they see out the window or stuff like that. But mostly they talk about, they think about kind of the world outside of that. Sometimes about the life they led before imprisonment, about their jobs, about their careers, about their cats and dogs and all of those things. Or just about the imagined world, books they're reading. I think a lot of people, even some people have always been reading, right? And then they go to prison and they continue doing so. But there are people who just pick up reading when they end up in prison. For example, there is a young Ukrainian prisoner who he should be considered to be prisoner of war, but somehow he ended up in a Russian prison. And he writes that he generally before prison, he was an outdoorsy person and he liked sports. He liked hiking. And that was what he was doing mostly in his free time. But in prison, he can't do that. And he started reading and he reads a lot and he likes talking about the books he reads. You know, he writes to the people he's communicating with, and he says that clearly now he's going to continue reading afterwards. I think a lot of people are kind of trying to think about the world around them and just kind of expand where they are at. I don't notice that a lot of them are talking about the future directly, just because many people are afraid to make specific plans. Yes, they hope to get out and they really hope to go home to see their loved ones, but it's not, you know, projecting those things into reality, because that's a scary thought. What if it's taken away at the last moment? But many people are kind of expanding their world by reading and by reading the letters. That's why they ask questions about they ask people who are writing to them where they're from, what can they tell them about the place, about the culture, about the politics in America, all of those things, depending on, you know, the interest of the people. But they really are interested in that because that's a window into a different world, not the walls there.
Irina, as a university professor, and you've had some of your students come to events as well when we hosted at the University of Minnesota, we're sure super grateful for that. As a university professor, why would you say it's important to get students involved, and especially hosting events at universities?
I think it's important to offer this opportunity to students. When I'm saying we're getting students involved, it doesn't mean that this is any part of the curriculum, right? So we're not telling students, well, today we are writing letters to political prisoners. But of course, we are letting students know. And personally, I'm telling them that this is what I'm doing. And if this is something you're interested in, you can do. You can come to our events. And some of them do. First of all, a lot of students are interested in volunteering in general. Younger people tend to have energy and they want to use that energy to do something, just to do something meaningful with their lives and with their free time and with, you know, always also finding friends and finding people from different cultures. Those of them who are studying Russian are obviously also interested in this for cultural reasons. And I've had students who are actually trying to write in Russian from the start. And this is amazing, and I think the response has been great. That you know, somebody is writing in Russian. It may be a little simpler Russian than you know the Russian that you get if you write in English, and then somebody translates it into perfect Russian. But that is genuine, and that is that shows care.
Irina, would you read some of the excerpts from the letters that you wrote and received?
Absolutely. I am going to read like Elizabeth, I usually introduce myself and just say who I am, where I'm from, and I always include a part that, you know, what I do for a living, right, that what I teach, and I say that I actually have a lot of interest, and I always offer to talk about something that interests people and to tell me if there is, for example, some area of interest that they would like to keep up with. Some of them are interested in sports results because the information doesn't get there, and I mean like factual information about the world events. Some of them are interested in news of science, right, and technology and things like that. And I always offer that, you know, if there is an area in which you would like to know what's happening, I can be that source, and I can just tell you the new events that I discovered. So I'm going to read an excerpt from my letter to Sergei Korneliovsky, who is a journalist, and he is almost in the Russian Far East currently, who was imprisoned for his political views. And he asked me about Minnesota and, you know, where I currently live. And he asked me what the nature looks like here. And I'm saying that, well, nature for me currently is mostly the river, a little bit of which I can see from the window in my home. But it's not just a river. That's Mississippi, which is the biggest river in North America and the third in the world after Amazon and Nile. And I am from St. Petersburg, so it's for me difficult to imagine life without rivers, and all cities without rivers seem not fully functional to me. And my favorite cities after, you know, my hometown are London and Turin, and in both cases those are cities built around the river. And there is a movie that is not too well known, The Prairie Home Companion, which is a 2006 movie by Robert Altman, dedicated to a radio show in Minnesota that ran from 1974 to 2016. And it was made in a local theater where musicians were performing live. And the movie is about the last concert that took place before the radio was, you know, before the radio was closed. And I watched that movie back home in Russia before knowing anything about Minnesota or that show. But there was a song there, My Minnesota Home, and I loved that song. And to me, that's an American, The River Volga Flows, another song that I like, because that's a song about the river and how the river is a sign of home. And now I can see that river from my own window. And he responded that, from the first lines of your letter, I started thinking that I used to see different views from my window. At some point, I could see the silhouettes of the nighttime Jerusalem or a little bit of the Dead Sea, and that was 30 years ago. And I'm getting confused with my geography. From your letter, I thought that Minnesota is the north of the U.S., but on the other hand, Mississippi is something that is related to the south, Uncle Tom's hut, slave ownership. And I watched a movie at some point, a documentary about what happened over time to the small towns along the river of along this legendary river, when the farmers sold their property to oil manufacturers and all the abandoned homes of the 18th century, as if they are coming off of the pages of Gone with the Wind. And I also experienced similar feelings when I saw a photo gallery of Detroit abandoned in the 1970s with the economic crisis and the Japanese auto manufacturers contributed to creation of the ghost city. And kind of that's how it goes, right? So you also find out things that people knew before, and their memory goes on. And then he also continues to say that he thinks he saw the movie, and he never connected it to the state of Minnesota. He saw it at some point, and that's how kind of you make connections.
That is awesome. And thank you guys for coming towards the end of our show today. And we've heard so many beautiful examples of connection and building bridges. And I thank so much for all of our volunteers.